Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Ah. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Good morning, millennials. Welcome back to The Toast. Happy Thursday. Hope everyone's having a blessed day. I know we are, because we are now the furthest away we will ever be this year from Yom Kippur 2023. We're done. You're done.
We're done. It was a rough day yesterday.
I
don't know where your fast ranks compared to all your other fasts, but for me, this was absolutely the hardest one yet. Probably because I woke up at 7:30 with Rolled, and I didn't really get to nap. And the night before, I had a migraine, and then I went to sleep and I woke up feeling better. But then the events of the day, no water, no coffee, no food, gave me another migraine. I had a migraine for 24 hours and it was miserable.
For me, shockingly, the most difficult part of yesterday was not the lack of food. It was the lack of phone.
The lack of the talk.
I don't think I've ever had a more difficult time spending the whole day off of my phone. I felt so disconnected. I was ill-prepared. I was just shook.
I've never had an easier time being off my phone. Usually, I'm weirded out by how much I miss it on Yom. I'm like, wow, okay, maybe I have a phone addiction. I barely even noticed yesterday, which was so unexpected. But good.
Not me.
I think that means that my addiction is dissipating. I'm sorry for you.
Not me.
But we all have our struggles.
I was not okay.
I'm sorry.
And if you could count the amount of times I thought about, like, picking up my phone and being like, oh, no. It must have been 42,000.
That's crazy. Does that make you want to make any changes?
No.
No.
Yeah, it makes me want to convert so I never have to do it again.
Ha! Well, okay. Well, at least now you're back with your phone reunited.
And it feels so good. I love you, bitch. I'm sorry I left you alone for 24 hours. I hope you were okay.
You don't know what you got till it's gone.
So true. I'm so glad that's behind us. To our Jewish toasters, you did it. We did it. And we don't have to do it again for another year. So now I can breathe. And actually, I felt like it was a really productive day in terms of atoning. I felt very toneful. Mm-hmm. And I feel really good about kicking off this new year with positive energy and happy vibes, and I'm so looking forward to now getting back to talking shit without feeling guilty. Like, totally. It was not working for me.
Tabula rasa. So what are you going to do in this new year, be mindful of, that you've been doing in the past that you needed to atone for?
Like, nothing. No, I'm totally kidding. I think, I don't really, it wasn't like specific things, you know, it was just like a general being.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, I want to, you know, commit less crimes, you know, like, I don't really have specific, like a
list. Like, do you feel like you want to talk less shit?
No, because I like it.
I like the beat. I actually don't even think we talk that much shit. Like, we don't just talk shit for shit's sake, but we...
No, I definitely think we talk a lot of shit.
Like, on the show or
no,
in private?
No, I think on the show we're like super, like, good.
I agree. Okay, I was talking about on the show. In our personal
lives? In our personal lives, like on FaceTime, like we are animals.
That's true. Okay, animals. But let me ask you a question. Is it talking shit if you're spitting facts?
And merely exchanging information? No, I don't think that's considered gossip.
I think gossip is like opinions. But if you're just like stating a fact, an unfortunate, hurtful fact,
Yeah, I think gossip is like spreading rumors, not exchanging information.
Not exchanging information and telling the truth and the truth only.
Yeah, no, I always have a hard time deciphering, like, truly, and I mean this genuinely, like, what is, like, gossip and what is just facts? Because, like, okay, let's say someone we know is getting divorced. And, like, it's, like, they're not hiding it. Like, they're getting divorced. But, like, I tell my friend who doesn't know. I'm exchanging information, but I'm also gossiping.
I think just telling someone the information is fine. It's, like, how you say it and then what you follow it up with. Like, good, yeah. She deserves it. She's a cheating whore.
Right, right.
That's the gossip. That's the Lashon Hara. Why would she be the
cheating whore?
Because she's your friend.
Okay. Also, by the way, today's, like, a huge, significant day at the toast. Do you know why?
No.
No clue.
Because of our guest interview today?
Well, yes, which we'll get to in a minute, but no. I do believe this is the first time in toast herstory that I am wearing my hair up.
Aside from that day last week.
Did I wear my hair up last week?
Yeah, and it was so stunning when you wore the 1989 sweatshirt.
I'm not okay.
No, but I did notice when we logged on today that your hair is up. It's looking dirty. Great. I've been trying to tell you for years that you should put your hair up, and I'm glad that you're on the hair up train.
I don't know if I'm necessarily on the train. Well, I'll have to watch today's
twice
episode.
In 2 weeks.
I'll have to watch today's episode with a fine tooth comb.
The only thing I'll say is that with the headphones, it changes. You know, now you kind of look like Princess Leia.
You're so fucking mean. You're so fucking mean.
Because it's the two balls.
I get it. Okay, now I'm self-conscious, so thank you so much for
that. No, I just said you look great. I just said you look great, but you only hear the negative.
You want to hear something funny, how you're wearing your hair down and you look like Princess Leia, bitch?
That's because I'm saying the headphones like make us look like Princess Leia.
Well, maybe we should ditch the headphones, okay?
I know. I was actually thinking about going back to pods. They're just so ugly.
I know.
These at least are like cool podcastings.
But thank you for reminding that today's episode is going to be so long and so special because not only do we have a fabulous show with the Beverly Hills finale recap, the Salt Lake City recap, fabulous Fast Five, two fabulous girls. We also have a fabulous interview. If you're listening as a podcast, you can just keep listening. It'll be at the end of the episode. And if you're watching on YouTube, we have another video on our channel right now. We did record the interview for video as well. We sat down with Jessica Knoll, who is definitely a role model of ours. She is the author of Luckiest Girl Alive, and she was an executive producer and screenwriter for the film that just debuted on Netflix starring Mila Kunis. And it was really cool to talk to an author. Like, I felt so scholastic.
So scholastic to talk to an author about truly our favorite book, and that's now been turned into a movie. She's also telling us about her new book, which sounds so good. It was just a great conversation, and I'm loving being such a core part of the literary world.
Well, two things. One, she did tell us afterwards, and I kind of wish we got it on the recording, that during the filming, Mila Kunis' understudy came up to her and was like, I am trying to find the book, but it's sold out on Amazon because they talked about your book on the toast.
And they keep talking about it.
And we literally sold out a book. Not mine. Happy for her, but whatever. That was really cool. And the second thing, I have such breaking news. Like breaking news.
Do I know it yet?
No. You're going to be shocked.
Share with the class.
Do you know what Ben did yesterday on Yom Kippur?
No. He read.
He read.
What did he read?
He read Phil Knight, the founder of Nike's memoir, which is like, I helped him find, he was looking for like a good, like inspiring story. And it was all over these like lists. It was on every single list. He's like 25% through. He loved it. And I was like, do you support women in literacy now? And he said, no, he supports men in literacy.
Okay, at least he's consistent in the fact that he doesn't want to see literate women, period.
No, at least he's consistent in the fact that he doesn't support women, period. Not even literate women, just women, period.
Period. I'm glad that he found a book that he likes. That's really a gorgeous update. If we could convince Ben to become a reader, like, and push the boundaries further than I ever thought possible, that would be
wild. We can do anything. Wild.
We could do anything. Speaking of reading, new episode of The Redheads dropped today, Lessons in Chemistry. This episode was such a delight to record because for the most part, the four of us are on the same page. There's in every single episode, no matter how good the book is, there's always someone who it wasn't for them. But all the girlies love this book and for different reasons too. I feel like there were parts of each character that really resonated with everyone. Obviously for Snitch, it was 630, the dog, who was just like the best dog in the world. It was such a good book. It was such a good episode. So please check it out. The Redheads Book Club.
Oh my God.
And then at the end of the episode, we all recap the other books that we read this month. I read 5, Dana read 5, I think Snitch read 3, and Becky read 1. So there's 14 book recommendations in the episode if you're looking for other things to read. Also, I'm kind of taking over the podcast charts, like not to make it a really big deal. And I'm just like guesting on all these podcasts.
Yes.
Yesterday, my episode of Straight Up with Stassi dropped, and it was so much fun to record. I recorded it like 2 weeks ago. Stassi and I have so much in common. Not only is she a toaster, so all toasters everywhere universally have so much in common, but like our interests are so aligned. It felt like we were just getting coffee, catching up, and sharing TV and book recommendations. It was so much fun to record. And I'm like an OG listener of Straight Up with Stassi. When I used to work in corporate America, it was the first and only podcast that I listened to at the time, and I adored it. So to be on it now, if I could tell that girl, she'd be like, go off, queen.
She would be like, that's my girl.
That's my girl.
Totally.
So check it out, Straight Up with Stassi. And then also I was on Sophia with an F last week, which the episode is really making a lot of waves. I'm seeing a lot of clips like on TikTok and stuff.
I saw it too today. It came up on my FYP this morning.
FYP? No way.
Yeah. Well, because I follow Sophia, but still.
Okay, you don't have to minimize it. But what's so interesting about guesting on other people's podcasts are the things that they want to talk to you about. You know, like you see yourself one way, but it's interesting to hear how someone else, like what are the most interesting parts about you that they want to ask you about or things that you've done. Or
it's also just like relaxing to not have to think.
That too, but it's like when I was preparing for these interviews, it's like, I wonder what they want to talk to me about. Like, what do they want to get my take on? And
they probably want to talk to you about being Roald's mom. Like for me, that's the most interesting part about you right now.
We actually spoke about that on both podcasts. Towards the end of Stassi's podcast, we had a very just honest conversation about postpartum things, weight loss, etc. I think it's so important to just like have those conversations on podcasts wherever, because the thought of having all those feelings of like not being happy with where you are and also feeling like you can't talk about it is so shitty. And I've actually seen over the last few months, some people being like, so disappointing to see you talking about postpartum weight loss. And it's like, I couldn't disagree more. I think people not having, I think everybody's going through it privately. So like, why can't we talk about it and just make ourselves feel a little better knowing that other people are feeling the exact same way? And it doesn't mean you need to go and lose all the baby weight, but you're allowed to like not love what you're looking like.
Yeah, no. And also just the concept of somebody like telling you what to talk about on your podcast, like go away.
Go away. I just couldn't disagree more. And I know that if I wasn't a podcaster and I was going through this, it would,
you would appreciate someone talking.
Oh my God,
it.
I would appreciate it so much. Just the honesty. Even if we're not gonna like solve anything today, like can we just complain?
That's kind of the ethos of the Morning Toast. We're not gonna solve anything, but we are gonna complain.
And we're just gonna talk about it. And now we've said it.
Thank you, Jackie. I couldn't agree more.
So go check out your girl on all these podcasts, having such great combos with such great women. Yeah. And I'm actually a woman who supports other podcasting women.
Woman. Yeah. No, I would agree with that.
Yeah. I think you are too.
I support other podcasting women.
Yeah.
We've got a great show. We've got stories. We've got Beverly Hills season finale was on last night. It was infuriating. Real Housewives of Salt Lake City episode 2 was on, and it was also infuriatingly boring. So we're going to talk about that in the TV recap. It's Thursday. It is also our last episode of the week because tomorrow I'm headed to Pittsburgh for my show. Tickets available at girlwithnojob.com/tour. Good luck finding tickets. And Jackie is headed to Atlanta. She's going to be a little peachy girly. Her and Ben are doing a meet and greet for Spritz Society in Atlanta at Total Wine. So check the Spritz Instagram for all the details because Jackie's going to be in Atlanta for a day and you don't want to miss it.
You don't want to miss it. And I would feel bad that there's no episode tomorrow, but today's episode is literally going to be 2 hours. Plus, as stated, there's an episode of The Redheads. There's Straight Up with Stassi with Jackie O, and there's Sophia with an F with Jackie with an O. So don't
Jackie with
miss
an
it.
O.
Yes. Also, I wanted to talk about the content that I consumed yesterday, and I would love to hear what got you through the day. I had planned on reading, but then I had such a bad migraine that I could not. I watched a few interesting things. Caught up on Tell Me Lies. Are you caught up?
I am.
The new episode?
I am.
Really good episode, but really infuriating. Like,
no, like Wriggle. What's his name?
Wriggly.
Wriggly. Need to kill him. Need to kill him. He's so motherfucking annoying.
He's so annoying, but he's such like a lovable.
No.
Sweet.
No,
guy.
He's not. No, he wasn't like maybe in the beginning, but he's annoying as fuck now. And disrespecting someone's home, that's not going to work for me.
Yeah, no, I know. But, you know, like at the end when he just, like Evan and Wriggly should actually be friends. They both have hearts. It's Steven who's like ruining the group. I can't even tell you how much I hate this man.
I can't even tell you how much I hate this man. He's so creepy. Like, he's perfectly cast because he's fucking evil and I'm really feeling it in my core. But the silver lining of the episode was Bree and Evan, like, finally getting together and Bree finally having sex with someone who, like, gives a shred of a shit about her. And it was glorious. I was so happy for her.
I was so happy for her, too. I also watched the new docuseries on Netflix called Eat the Rich. It's about the GameStop situation that happened. It's three parts. Pretty fast moving. I liked it because I felt like at the time, and I feel like we said this all the time when we were reporting on it, like I didn't fully understand everything that was happening and how it happened. And now I've got it. And it was just, it was really, really interesting. So I would recommend it.
Last night I saw it when I was perusing for something to watch on Netflix. And instead of that, I chose The Bling Ring. And I only watched two episodes and I don't know if it's a story that like we need to keep retelling, especially because it's pretty much a guide for how to rob a celebrity's house. Like that guy, Nick, who really like started the whole ring with that girl, Rachel. He literally told you how to do it, like how to find the addresses, go on Google Maps, search the terrain, go up the back. They have all these fire escape hikes in these gated communities. So it was like a little too instructorial, you know, like here's exactly how to do it. And everyone's stories are conflicting with one another. You know, Nick is saying Alexis, you know, wanted to be there so bad. She was totally sober. She was ready to go. She's saying she was so fucked up on drugs. She had no idea where she was. She doesn't remember a thing. So it's like we didn't get like a conclusive. I mean, I didn't finish it, but I don't think we get a conclusive storyline because they're both like lying on each other. But the way that the mom from Pretty Wild is the star of the documentary because like, she's a full-blown liar. And, like, every time she says something, they cut to Alexis and Alexis's sister, Gabby, like, contradicting the mom entirely.
Oh, wow. It makes me feel weird that this story is so glamorized. Yes. And there was the movie and everything. Because even as I was watching last night Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, that's, like, in a few years if we're getting, like, a movie and a docuseries and all this stuff about the people who robbed Dorit's house.
Nope. 100%. Like, and I was actually glad they had Audrina Patridge on there because the whole time it was like glamorous, glamorous, bags, shoes, cash, Rolex. And then Audrina was like, I was so fucking afraid for my life. I locked myself in my closet. I called the police. I never was able to go back into that house again. It still freaks me out. They had her interview be done in the house that she was robbed in, like they were renting it. And she was so freaked out. Like, and that's what the head of the LAPD was like. Burglary is like not a victimless crime. Even if the people are rich, it's like, first of all, Rachel Bilson, they stole her mom's engagement ring that she had on her. Like, first of all, you lose such sentimental things. It's not just about the money. You're like invading someone's private space. Like, robbing the rich is not a victimless crime. Just because you're rich doesn't mean you don't have feelings.
No, and just like to disturb someone's peace like that and cause trauma that they probably will struggle with for the rest of their lives. Like, I don't find that really interesting and something that I want to be watching.
I agree. They were like making light of it. Maybe it gets more serious. I didn't really feel like I needed to watch the whole thing, but I was. Oh, and then they had Perez Hilton on it. And that's when I was like, I gotta go.
Yeah. These documentaries always have the fucking worst people.
Yeah. Have you no scruples? Come on.
No. Even the one I just watched was.
Who was in it?
I'll tell you later.
Okay. Why?
I'll tell you later.
Okay.
And then I also, I started Blonde.
Ooh.
And I wanted to get into it because she's really good in it. She's amazing. She looks like her. She sounds like her. And she's giving it her all. I didn't like the way the movie was set up. I didn't know like what year it was ever. We're flashing back. We're going forward. It was so weird. And that's
the part. It's like a psychological thriller, right?
I didn't like how the director, whoever that is not my kind of director. I wanted to know more about Marilyn. I feel like I don't know anything about her, but she's like this iconic. huge iconic figure in everybody's life and forever in history.
I saw a clip on TikTok from the movie of like the baby in her womb, like talking to her, begging her not to get an abortion.
That didn't happen. Well, I mean, I got to the part, I already watched the part where she gets an abortion and I didn't go further, but they're showing the baby in the womb, but it didn't talk.
Oh, okay. Like in the scene that I saw, the baby was like, please don't do what you did last time.
Oh, okay. So then that's further along.
Yeah. And I was like, that is a unique POV. I was shocked because I thought it was like this glamorous Marilyn movie. And that's what I realized. It's not like other movies.
Yeah, but she's amazing. And I wanted to know more about Marilyn, but I'm not going to turn it back on.
Yeah, I feel that.
I wish it was just like a director who just goes a story from like A to Z. That works for me.
I love an A to Z moment. I think that directors are getting like really creative, going beyond the A to Z structure. Like they're going, you know, B to F, Z to Y,
right? But you know what,
L to Q.
You know what I could do? I could do L to A to Z. You know,
of course. Once, see, that's putting a little spin on a traditional structure of yes, A to Z.
B to F, L to Y, Z to A is not working for me.
No, this is literally that scene from Friends. Like 2-4, a 4-6-2, a 5-6-7, 7-7-7-7. Seven.
And I caught up on Southern Charm.
Great.
But it was the season finale. I don't really have anything to say. I'll catch you at the reunion.
Cool. Should we dive in?
Yes, I think without further ado, we should dive into the Fast Five stories that you need to know before you realize how much you love the show, The Toast. I'm going to try new stuff every day.
No, for sure. On Tuesday's episode, people did like mine. Like, less is more when it comes to the change.
I agree with that. And maybe that's where I'll land. I just would like to improv and try a few different things. I feel like this is a time of experimentation. And with your blessing, I would like to do that. Obviously, the one I just said is not it.
Obviously. I think we can rule that out for sure.
But I'd like to try some stuff.
Okay. Well, today's experimental episode is brought to you by ZocDoc, a free app that shows you doctors who are patient-reviewed, take your insurance, and are available when you need them. We use ZocDoc. You should, too. I'm always having mysterious ailments, you know, and I'm like, oh, I need to go see an allergist. Oh, this rash, I need to go see a dermatologist. And it can be really hard to just find, like, a trusted doctor who takes your insurance, especially if you just moved. It's really difficult to get good recommendations. But on ZocDoc, you can find every specialist under the sun, whether you're trying to straighten your teeth, fix an achy back, get a mole checked out, or removed. ZocDoc has you covered. By the way, just side note, I got a message from a girl this week who was like, I have debated getting this mole on my face removed like 4 years. And like you inspired me to do it. And I was always nervous it was going to scar. Then I saw you and I did it. And it was the best decision I ever made. So I'm just like changing lives.
Changing lives.
Literally. ZocDoc's mobile app is as easy as ordering a ride to a restaurant, getting delivery to your house. You search, find, and book doctors with just a few taps. Find and review local doctors where you can read patient-verified reviews from real people who made real appointments. So now when you walk into your doctor's office, you are set to see someone in your network who gets you. Go to ZocDoc.com to find the right doctor that's right for you. Book an appointment in person or even remotely, and that'll work for your schedule. Every month, millions of people use ZocDoc. We are two of them. It is our go-to whenever we need to find and book a quality doctor. Also for me, when I travel is probably when I get the most mysterious ailments, and being on tour and just like a fabulous girl who's always, you know, traveling, it's hard to get healthcare when you're in a different state, and ZocDoc is super helpful for that.
Especially when you move, like right. I've been on ZocDoc. I need a dentist.
Right.
Oh,
right.
These teeth are hurting.
Go to ZocDoc.com/toast and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then start your search for a top-rated doctor today. Many are available within 24 hours. ZocDoc is spelled ZocDoc.com/toast. ZocDoc.com/toast.
Thank you, McClardia.
You're welcome.
And you know who's one of the highest-rated doctors on ZocDoc?
Dr. Ficheman.
The work that he does.
And actually, you know who beat him out this year for the highest-rated doctor on ZocDoc?
Who?
Dr. Nazardin.
Of course. I mean, that's always going to be, you know,
the benchmark.
Who Theo, and it's important to have people to look up to and
role models,
have
yeah.
goals. And if only Theo one day could do what he's done.
100%.
And be so funny along the way.
I fucking love Dr. Nazardin.
We should try and get him on the toast. Those are the interviews I'm interested in conducting.
100%.
Our first story it hurts my heart to say, because I feel like I've been living in a state of denial about this one. Tom Brady hires a divorce lawyer after Giselle retains her own. After wife Giselle Bundchen retained a divorce lawyer, Tom Brady enlisted one for himself, a source confirms to People. On Tuesday, People reported that Giselle hired a divorce attorney amid their marriage troubles, and Brady, her husband of 13 years, was, quote, trying to figure out what to do. Page Six was the first to report the news. The couple, who share two children, along with Brady's son, John Edward, with his ex, Bridget Moynihan, have been dealing with, quote, a lot of tension in the marriage, in part because of Brady's decision to return to the NFL this season after a brief retirement. A source previously told People she was so happy when he announced his retirement, and obviously now is frustrated that he's back in the game.
Yeah, so I feel like this is, you know, very much like a confirmation. And that doesn't mean that two people can't reconcile amidst divorce proceedings. But I'm just going to move forward with the mentality that these two are no longer together. And while that is extremely sad, it's devastating. It's heartbreaking. It is fun to imagine two single people out of Tom Brady and Giselle.
I mean, the internet is ablaze being like Giselle and Pete Davidson, which...
Yeah, which I totally could see, like, a little fling. Also, Girl Boss Town had a great prediction that, like, Kim and Tom Brady, like, will go on a date. Like, maybe not OTP, but, like, they might go on a date.
That's gorgeous. Okay,
I mean, stunning.
So that works for Tom. He's... settled. There's no one else on the list that I feel like he has to be with, except that Kim, she's on the list.
Yeah.
And so for Giselle, it could be Jason Momoa.
Oh my God, it's Jason Momoa. Even though I don't know if he should be on the list. He was spotted out again with Aza Gonzalez.
But she's also still on the list. And I feel like once we take them off, that will be a big day, but we need more confirmation, not just like they were at the same place.
Okay.
Also, I feel like if we think it's not going to happen, then it will happen. So it's good if we keep pretending like it won't.
No, and like I'm so shipping Jason Momoa and Aza Gonzalez, but knowing that Giselle's now on the market, I'm kind of like hoping that the ship sinks.
Yeah.
I'm self-sabotaging my own ship.
Giselle and Josh Groban.
Nah.
Giselle and Keenan.
Oh, that's cute.
Well, let's think of Giselle's type, because she dated Leo and then she dated Tom Brady.
She loves like an all-American sweetheart, like
she
boy
does.
Next door.
Brad Pitt.
Brad Pitt.
Brad Pitt.
Pitt de la Brad.
Pittsville.
Pitt,
comma Brad.
Comma Brad. Brad Pitt.
Even though he's been spotted with M. Rada, they're not giving us enough.
And I'm not here for it.
Oh, I am, but like he's still in the game to me. He's on the market still, so I'm going to keep... theorizing.
I'm not here for it.
You're not. Why?
I'm just not.
Okay. Not every ship is for every sailor.
Right. Beautifully said. Truly stunning. This is sad. I feel like this divorce is like going to be kind of lengthy and messy because they've been married for so many years and they have so many assets. Like between him and her, and I know celebrities, even like, they always keep their shit clean. But like, this was a real marriage, like a real family, a real institution.
I agree. I feel like they were so in love. And so when that love goes south, it really turns into like a visceral hate. And that's when things get messy. You know, I feel like.
I'm nervous. I'm really nervous. This is giving like PTSD from, you know, children of divorce. I feel like this is going to be huge.
Yeah, I hope it's not
contentious.
I hope they can part amicably for the sake of everyone.
Right. And you think like when you have so much money, like, you know, all right, you take this house. But it's not. Like no matter how much money you have, like divorce, there's so much like hatred and anger and jealousy. Like even if you have a lot of assets or not a lot of assets, like it's the same hatred.
But I feel like it becomes less about the assets and more about control. Just sticking it to the other person.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Wishing them the best, truly. You know, hopefully who's probably, having a great day is Bridget Moynihan.
Yeah.
Because Tom bounced on her for Giselle and also, like, took the kid with them half the time. So I'm sure she's having, it's a great day to be Bridget Moynihan. And I don't think I would say that for every day because for a while she was, like, the loser of this group. Like,
and she's always Tom Brady's ex.
Like, she has, she's on a hit show. She's on two iconic shows. She's obviously Erin on Blue Bloods. She's Natasha on Sex and the City. She's had an illustrious career. But like what? Oh, you want to hear something so crazy?
Always.
I don't know if I've ever told this story. And like maybe I won't get invited back now. But like I haven't been invited back since. So I was invited to like watch a taping of Blue Bloods when they were filming their family scene, which is like really the only scenes that all the cast is in because.
Is Thrice there today?
No.
I just heard a bark.
Maybe it was Bruno.
No, he's not here.
No, Theo's not here.
Are you lying to me? Did anyone else hear that?
No, I swear to God. Maybe it was a phantom bark.
I hear phantom every. I hear phantom cries.
I hear now, phantom sirens. Okay, but so.
Sorry to disturb you.
I went to a family dinner scene and I was like sitting in those director's chairs with the headphones on, like watching them do the takes. And in between takes, like the cast was just chatting and the cast is filled with like normal fucking people. It's not, even though Tom Selleck is there, like they're all just normal. They talk. He was talking about his horse farm. He has an avocado farm in Malibu. And someone was talking about how they're seeing a guy who lives in Boston. And Bridget Moynihan was like, oh, I used to see a guy who lives in Boston when he was on the Patriots. And it was like silent for a second and then everyone laughed. And so she was like being funny about it. So I actually ended up like having a lot of respect for her just from that interaction. But I do think it's a good day to be her.
Yeah. And as far as being invited back to the set, I don't feel like that's a recurring, like how many times do you want to go to the set?
Oh, I'd like to go every day to work and there. And I'd like to be the star if we're just requesting things.
What would your role be if you were on the show?
That's so funny. I was talking to my good friend. Wait, why can't I remember his name? I was talking to my good friend, Donnie Wahlberg, the last time I was on set there. He was like, you should come be an extra. And I'm like, please, like, set it up. I can't do that. You can. And he was like, well, what would you, like, want to do? And I was like, that's a good question. I think I would be, like, a DA from, you know, like Staten Island or something, like, from a different district. And I would come because we'd need to, like, work on this. There's a serial killer who, like, started in Staten Island. Now the feds are bringing in the New York City borough and we're all working together. And at first it's contentious because it's like, you know, this is my jurisdiction. No, this is your jurisdiction.
And you've been working on this case for so long.
And it's deeply personal to me. But sometimes when you're in a case like that, and I'm a DA, so I know this, like, when you're so in it, it almost blurs your vision because you become so attached to it. You have like horse blinders on. So Donnie Wahlberg would help me see out of that. And ultimately we'd catch the killer together and become huge heroes on the cover of every newspaper. And that's just an idea. And if it does well, you know, maybe every couple of years, there's another Staten Island crossover, you know?
Yeah. No, and I see that you haven't given this a lot of thought.
No, none whatsoever. It does not keep me up at night.
She doesn't lay awake at night.
No.
Dreaming of the Staten Island killer.
No, never, never. Me? No.
Not sure how we got here, but I do think it's time to move on to the next story.
We got here from Bridget Moynihan because she is the bridge to Terabithia.
She is the Bridget.
That's the name of today's episode. Bridget to Terabithia.
Okay, our next story. Fat Joe says he won't change his name even though he's no longer fat. Legendary rapper Fat Joe has lost a ton of weight over the past decade, but he says he's definitely not losing fat from his name. Quote, as a business, I spent so many millions and millions of dollars 100%. Marketing Fat Joe that it wouldn't be smart to change my name now. He told Page Six at the five-year celebration of... It's a 10 hair care. He said he won the name at the cost of some pretty serious teasing. He said, I grew up in the projects where there was no filter. When the teacher would say, write something on the chalkboard, I was always big so the crack of my butt would show. Aww. So the girls would be like, Joey Crack. And that's how I kept my name.
But so your name is Fat Joe, not Joey Crack.
Well, maybe it evolved over the
Wait,
years.
I'm going to cry. Like literally nobody talks about like the trauma of being fat when you're young. Like kids are so mean. And I love Fat Joe. And I think it's important to mention.
I love like turning your trauma into your success.
Disgrace queen.
Right. Literally. Like being inspired by something bad that happened to you and having the last laugh and
reputation.
You know, what's the phrase? Why can't I like running to the bank?
Laughing all the way to the bank. I agree. I love taking like your hardest moment and like making it into your like greatest achievement. I love
reputation.
That. Reputation. The snakes. Like she really did get the last laugh on that. So I don't think you should change it. Also, just from like a business and marketing standpoint, like Fat Joe is iconic. And I don't really feel, and I think if you've struggled with your weight, you're going to agree with this sentiment. Like being fat is not a physical state. It is a state of mind. Once you've been fat, like you are fat in your brain forever. Like that shit sticks with you. You are who you are because at one point in your life, you either were or currently are fat. It changes who you are as a person. So I feel like, you know, you can be fat, without being physically big. Do you know what I mean?
100%.
Okay.
I do.
Okay. So when I saw this, I was like, it never even occurred to me for him to change his name. And I don't think that he should.
No, I don't think that he should either. Though I do love a rebrand.
Love, love, love.
I don't think it's necessary in this case.
No, me neither. In this case, I rule no rebrand necessary.
No rebrand, especially spend millions and millions of dollars on marketing. We hadn't spent millions on marketing.
No, totally. And like, you know, he really came alive in the age of CDs and like records. So there are these ever, you know, I'm sure a lot of big Fat Joe fans have like tons of his CDs and then they become irrelevant.
Physical touch points. Well, no, I mean, and I was actually thinking about this with our merch because people are like, well, what about all the old merch? And like now to me, it's a vintage, iconic, one of a kind, never to be seen again merch.
No, it's true. And we do have one more merch collection that will feature some mourning elements.
Yeah.
And it's the final one. So.
And I just, and it makes me, I love our merch. It makes me love it even more.
Same.
To know like this was a moment in time and you were either there for it or you weren't.
The girls that get it, get it. And the girls that don't, don't.
Do not. Are you ready for our next story?
Mm-hmm.
So Daily Mail has an exclusive that the survivors of the 1994 killing that's now the subject of Kim Kardashian's Spotify podcast are saying that no one contacted them and insist the man she's trying to free is guilty because they saw him do it. So a brother and sister who survived the 1994 triple murder that is now the subject of Kim Kardashian's true crime podcast on Spotify tell Daily Mail the star never bothered to contact them to check the facts of the case and insist the man she's trying to free is in fact guilty. Yikes. Kevin Keith was convicted of murdering his ex-girlfriend, Marichelle Chapman, her four-year-old daughter, Marche, and Marichelle's aunt, Linda Chapman, at their home in Ohio in 1994. He has been in prison for 28 years, but insists he's innocent. Kim believes him and has used his story as the launchpad for her Spotify podcast, The System, which just launched this week. We were just talking about it. But two people who survived the shooting and witnessed it say he's guilty. They are Quinita and Quentin Reeves, Marichelle's cousins who were 6 and 4 at the time. Now in their early 30s, the siblings tell DailyMail.com they were stunned when the podcast emerged on October 3rd without their contribution. They claim they were never invited on as guests and that they've never even heard from the crusading Kardashian. They said she did not contact us not one time. If Kim wants to get involved, she should come and meet us face to face, Quentin said, who is now a father of two. The siblings, who were both shot in the stomach by the murderer, remain adamant that Keith is the killer. They say they knew him because he was friends with their father and that they remember seeing him point the gun at their relatives. We saw it with our own eyes. You don't forget something like that. I don't care what Kim Kardashian says. Kevin did it, Quentin said.
I mean, I think wherever you fall on this case, whether you believe this man is innocent or guilty, I think we can all agree, like, if there's witnesses to the crime and Kim doesn't include them on the podcast, like, that's kind of like low-key like wrong. No, you know,
yeah, I mean, I think they would also be germane to the story,
right? People who are actually there.
Sources close to the podcast claim that the siblings were contacted, but they maintain that they were not.
Oh, so this is a game of he said she said.
Yeah, but if there are, I mean, I guess if they contacted them and they didn't respond, what can you do? But I
by the way, they don't have Kim doesn't have a responsibility to have them on, but she has a responsibility to reach out.
Yes, definitely.
For the sake of the podcast. And then from
there, they can decide what they want to do.
Yeah. Oh, this is touchy.
The sister said the first time she heard from the team was on Monday, October 3rd, the day the podcast went live, and that it was a heads up from the producer.
That doesn't count.
No, that doesn't count.
No.
This is a very weird situation. I do feel like Kim will have to address it.
Yeah.
And some of the reasons why Kim believes that this man is innocent is because I guess after the shooting, the siblings initially identified someone named Bruce as the person who did it. But they said that they were obviously in a haze post-shooting.
Right,
and they
shocked.
Oftentimes got those people, Keith and Bruce, confused. They were their dad's friends.
Oh, well, that does muddy the waters quite a bit. Also, being 4 and 6 is just like a difficult spot for witness, you know, like 4-year-olds and 6-year-olds are just like kids.
Yeah.
This is so like sticky. I don't even know what to say. Like, yikes.
Yikes.
I'm wishing everyone the best.
But even if Kim believes he's innocent, like on this podcast, she should paint the whole picture, which is there are people who witnessed it who do still maintain that it was him.
No, for the sake of the podcast, getting the full picture, I would be tuning into this podcast to learn everything there is to know about this case. And obviously the two witnesses is a huge part of that. So to leave it out ain't right.
Yeah.
That's totally fair.
So that podcast came out this morning, podcast drama. We'll see what happens with it.
Right.
But a little more legal news. Scammer Anna Delvey Scammer Anna Delvey is granted bail if she can find a place to stay.
In America? I thought she was getting deported.
She could be released from the ICE detention center, but only if the convicted fraudster can find a place to stay, Page Six has learned.
Anna, you can stay with me, but you just have to come on the toast like once a week.
On Wednesday, the U.S. immigration judge granted her $10,000 bond, but she needs to provide a residential address where she will be under 24-hour confinement for the duration of her immigration proceedings. I don't think that would work for you because you like to be alone.
Yeah, no, and 24 hours, this, like, get the fuck out of my house.
Fraudster trying to restart her members-only club and art dealings in your house.
You know, I think it's important that we talk about the building in which Anna Delvey was obsessed with 281 Park. It has been fully built out into a museum, and I believe it's a members club. Someone just invited me there to go to dinner, and I was like, wait, why do I know this address? And I couldn't make the dinner. I was so upset, but I do plan on going. It's this very exclusive restaurant museum experience. It's called, like, the Veronica or something. And Anna wasn't wrong about that, let's just say.
No, they kind of like took her idea, made it a reality.
It's literally an artist collective.
Literally.
No, she was not wrong.
No. And what are the odds that it's in the same building? I feel like they kind of stole her idea. They should have to pay her royalties.
Well, that's the thing about Anna is like she wasn't completely untalented. Like she was just a scheming fraudster con woman, but she had some good ideas. Was
the talented Mrs. Ripley.
Right.
Also, the judge ruled that she cannot post on her social media either directly or by a third party.
Well, maybe she'll stay with the girl. What was the girl's name?
Rachel?
No, from the hotel.
Why would that girl have her stay with her?
Because in the end, it really seemed like that girl was obsessed with Anna.
That's so crazy.
I know. Not Rachel. Even though Rachel, when I was watching the Bling Ring thing, the girl who started the robberies and who was like kind of like the brains behind it was this girl, Rachel, who wasn't a part of the documentary. And she reminded me so much of Rachel from Anna Delvey just because like she was the girl and her name was Rachel. It's just such like a standard name. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you would think like the mastermind behind this big Bling Ring would be like a Svetlana, you know, not a Rachel. You know, I went to high school with Rachel.
What's that saying? A rose by any other name is still a rose.
Yeah, I think what they're trying to say is it doesn't matter what your name is. Like, you're either a wench or you're not.
You're either a rose or a thorn.
Or a wench. You're a rose spelled W-R. No, sorry. That's not a funny joke. Continue.
Let's move on to our fifth and final story that will lead into our TV recap.
Okay, but I just wanted to let you know, I texted you a story. If you are feeling passionate about this final one, Olivia texted it to us.
I'm not feeling passionate about this final one because we could talk about it in the TV recap. Oh, it's here. Okay,
yeah, great. I thought this was interesting story.
We didn't have the article.
Business Insider Premium.
It's behind a paywall, but we got the PDF. So
Olivia has an account.
Here it is, and it's fascinating stuff.
It is.
Patreon's deal with top TikTokers fell far short of expectations, leaked documents show. Here's what it means for the company's creator strategy coming off its layoffs. Ooh, I didn't know they were doing layoffs. But leaked documents suggest Patreon's $1 million deals with TikTokers Larry and Lil Huddy fell short of expectations. Company insiders also said Patreon was in talks with Mr. Beast, but a deal was never reached. Insight into the deals comes amid company-wide layoffs that impacted the creator partnerships team.
So this report came out, by the way, and everyone was quaking over the fact that Mr. Beast almost did a deal with Patreon. Like, sure, that's interesting. The other part about Lil Huddy and Lorray, for me, is like so much more interesting.
Yes, tell them what happened.
Well, can you read it from the article? Because I don't know the figures exactly, but I know that Patreon paid
them $1
million. $1 million each?
Yeah, I believe so.
To join the platform, and for those who don't
know, $1 million deals, plural.
For those who don't know, Patreon is kind of like an OnlyFans. It's a platform where creators go and release content, but it's all behind a paywall. So you do like monthly subscriptions. We have one, patreon.com/thetoast. We finally got our new link, patreon.com/thetoast. Can't stress that enough.
So here are the details of their partnership. It's kind of, Patreon's like OnlyFans, but
it's a lot of podcasting.
But the creators that gravitate towards it are different. But it's a subscription for based creators.
Content, yeah.
Comedy creator LaRae launched in December his Patreon page, where he hosts a platform-exclusive talk show called The Hot Seat. In January, E-Boy and musician Chase Lil Huddy Hudson onboarded. Both creators are massive draws on TikTok with 26.3 million and 32.2 million followers, respectively. The total value for their Patreon deals was $1.325 million apiece, according to slides from a company presentation obtained by Insider. So Patreon paid these two really big TikTokers to come to the platform and do exclusive content over there and hopefully grow overall Patreon audience. According to the presentation, the company expected LaRae would drive $100,000 in subscriptions in his first month on the platform, but he brought in just $2,217 in total membership volume, which refers to total payments from fans.
$2,000.
Lil Huddy brought in $2,670, far less than the $25,000 Patreon expected for his first month.
And I just find this so interesting. One, because just like the landscape of social media, it's so crazy how you can have 30 million followers and not get more than 1,000 people to watch your talk show. And it's also just this like really interesting conversation about like followers versus fans and followers versus like a community. And if you would have asked me how much money I thought LaRae and Lil Huddy would bring on Patreon, like I could have told you this, by the way, like not every creator, no matter how many followers you have, is built for this type of model. And it's not even about how many followers you have, it's about what type of followers you have. Like Patreon would have been better off spending $1 million on like five much smaller creators who have like super engaged audiences and more niche, like moms, like real communities, as opposed to just like people with tons of followers. And I feel like this was a huge waste of money, clearly. And obviously, I don't think they spent the $2.6 million to get back the $2.6 million. They obviously wanted to make a dent in the 2.6, but it's marketing money. And every dollar you spend on marketing, you're not going to get back. But I don't think they thought it was going to be $2.6 million, $2,600 in returns.
Right, but at the end of the day, the marketing money that you spend eventually brings in more money. Otherwise, you're operating at a loss. So I don't think they expected it to be tomorrow, but to build up to getting those numbers back. And I do think it's crazy. And it really shows you, like, you could have a big audience, but are they an engaged audience or are they a passive audience?
No, and also, like, Patreon is really... It is podcast specific. Like, it's very comedy focused. It's a lot of true crime.
I imagine horror. That this was them trying to
expand,
get into a new category of almost like subscription model for YouTube, pretty much, you know?
Yeah. This was just such a miss. I'm like, I was shocked by these numbers. I saw TikTok going around and this girl was like, they literally paid these kids over $1 million and they brought in $2,000.
That's always so fascinating. Like, remember a while ago that influencer who had like millions of followers, she like put out a t-shirt and no one bought it.
No.
And she was like,
why did you buy my t-shirt? She did a meet and greet at VidCon.
We might be talking about two different people.
Oh, this girl had tons of followers, enough to get invited to VidCon to host a meet and greet, and not one person showed up.
That's a different person. This was a person who like put out a t-shirt, like merch, and no one bought her t-shirt. And she was like so upset, like, why didn't you guys buy my merch? And she like... I think she sold like 20 shirts.
I mean, well, that attitude is beyond entitled. Like, why didn't you guys buy my shirt? Who the fuck are you?
Right. But like, she has millions of followers, but they're not people who want to actually buy stuff from her.
No, like the intersection of followers versus like having transactionability and like an audience who actually wants to listen to your podcast, buy your book, see you on tour, do all these things, is they're not mutually exclusive. Like, just because you have followers doesn't mean any of them give a shred of a shit about what you have to offer.
Yeah.
And that's why when like people just get in this game and like rack up followers for the sake of having followers, thinking it's going to create all these other opportunities for them, when it doesn't, it's like, yikes.
Yeah. Yikes. But I do think that brands clearly are a little bit behind on yes. realizing that. No, they see followers and they're like, I want that.
No, but brands are also, I actually thought about this a lot recently because somebody was telling me about an influencer that they worked with who had like totally fraudulent followers. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really interesting. Like, don't you feel like that should be like a felony?
Ooh.
Because you're accepting, let's say all 3 million of my followers were fake. They're not. But let's say for argument's sake that they were. And I accepted a fee from McDonald's based on the belief that I had 3 million followers that they wanted to engage with. Like, isn't that nefarious?
Yeah, that is. And I think people going to the doctor,
their analytics, because when you do a campaign with a brand, you then have to send them analytics. Here's how many millions of people were reached. And they put together a deck. The agency puts it together for the brand. So I've heard of people even going so far as doctoring their own analytics, like on Photoshop, to substantiate the claim that they had real followers to begin with.
I don't know that that's a felony, but McDonald's should be able to sue you once they right. discover that. And I think that's kind of similar to companies who fudge their numbers and pretend to be more successful than they are. I don't think that the law yet has caught up with the internet, mm-hmm. but that is really interesting, especially fudging analytics. But what's crazy is like, if you like tell a lie in the mail, it's wire fraud.
Right, right. And like, who the fuck is using mail?
Or email, I think, too.
The government's got to grow up.
But you could doctor your analytics like that.
No, that's such a good call. Not the wire fraud. Mail fraud.
And email lie is wire fraud.
Yeah. That's so funny.
Yeah. So those are the Fast Five stories. I feel as though you needed to know them before we get into our TV recap.
100%. You needed to know them. We've got Beverly Hills season finale recap coming at you, and it's brought to you by BetterHelp. I'm going to need someone to talk to after this most recent season of Beverly Hills. It can be tough to train your brain to stay in problem-solving mode when faced with a challenge in life. But when you learn how to find your own solutions, there's no better feeling. A therapist can help you become a better problem solver, making it easier to accomplish your goals no matter what. So whatever it is that inspired you to start therapy, whether it's you going through a difficult time, a friend of yours recommended BetterHelp, whatever the reason is, you can expect results, you know? BetterHelp is going to match you with people who are going to give you the tools to work through whatever it is that you're working through in life. If you're thinking of giving therapy a try, BetterHelp is a great option. It's convenient, accessible, affordable, and entirely done online. You'll get matched with a therapist after filling out a brief survey. And the best part is that you can switch therapists anytime. If you have ever done therapy, you know that more often than not, the first person you match with might not be the best person for you. And that doesn't mean that that person is a bad therapist. It just means that you two aren't jiving. And a really kind of frustrating part about in-person therapy is like jumping around from different therapists, getting new recommendations. BetterHelp makes it really easy to switch. It's not awkward or anything. It's fabulous. So when you want to be a better problem solver, therapy can help get you there. Visit betterhelp.com/toast today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp.com/toast. Okay, Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. Just my first question for you on the episode was this gorgeous event Kyle held. And I don't feel like at any point they really told what the charity was.
Right. That's so true.
What is Princess Monica charity?
Let's look it up.
She was like, it's going to help our artists and all of our charitable endeavors. Like, it sounded like Anna Delvey.
Yeah, that's sounding like fraudulent philanthropy.
It feels sounding like a documentary we're going to read about in a few years.
It supports emerging performers in theater, dance, and film in the form of awards, grants, scholarships, and fellowships.
Oh, that's nice.
That is nice to help students.
It was a really classy affair between the diamonds and the
It was wonderful to see the women at an event that other people were at too. Cause yes. Like usually they would get all dressed up, black tie, diamonds, et cetera, just to like sit around and talk to each other. But right. The fact that there was other people, there were things happening. That's what we used to get from Real Housewives. Like there were events and then the women showed up to them. Now they just manufacture stuff and everyone gets so dressed true. Up to the nines. And it's just like so silly and just like a waste of glam.
But before that party, I thought that Garcelle's, Bubbles, and Birkin's party looked so much fun. Everyone was like actually having a good time.
Yeah.
And I needed a Birkin. Like I was literally so jealous that little like setup the guy had. It was what a fabulous way to shop.
Totally. Was there one that caught your eye in particular?
I mean, honestly, the green one that Sutton and Kyle were fighting over, like, was sickening.
And did any of them even buy a bag except for Garcelle?
Sutton bought that taupe clutch, which was kind of ugly. And I don't know if anyone else bought anything.
Yeah, no, but it was a fun afternoon and the women were in good spirits.
It was stunning. I just love Garcelle. And I also love Cherie. Like, we need to know Cherie a little bit more. They've really given her nothing. And she's still, like, super funny and interesting in the small things that she gets. Like, I would like to know more about Cherie.
Yeah, maybe next season she'll come on, because I think a lot of people probably like her.
Yeah.
What I love about Garcelle is I feel like when we're watching the show, it's so easy to see what's right and what's wrong and, like, what's happening, because we have, like, this zoomed mm-hmm. out view. And I'm so, like, I admire so much that in every moment, in every situation, like, Garcelle can see exactly what's happening. And yep. it's as if, like, she has that perch and that perspective, yeah. but she doesn't. Because sometimes in the moment, you don't.
It's hard to tell what's right.
What's right. Like, you don't see the other conversations that are happening. You don't know what's going on. So it's hard to be right when you don't have all the information.
Totally.
But she nails it every single time.
No, you're so right. She's so wise and mature. And I just fucking love this woman. And honestly, I don't know what we would do if she wasn't on this show.
Because oh my God.
That group that ran this show for the last couple of years, Erica, Rinna, Dorit, Kyle, it's not cutting it for me anymore. And I thought it was really interesting that Kyle chose to confide in Garcelle at that event, because I think she sees Garcelle as the only one who's seeing this clearly. Like, Dorit is so desperate to stay in the middle. She's, like, not going to take any stand. Erica and Lisa are, like, coming for Kyle and her sister. And so she sought refuge in the only rational person in this group. And I thought that was so wise of her. And I know a lot of people are like, well, why is it on Lisa and Erica to stop the fight with Kathy? Like, it should be on Kathy to stop the fight with Kathy. And I just don't agree with that. Like, I don't.
No, especially because Lisa is saying, like, I'm bringing this up because I'm defending you and I'm protecting you. And so Kyle is saying, if you want to defend me and want to protect me, what I need to do is move on. She apologized, like, and you need to accept that and move on. But Lisa can't do that because at the end of the day, she's not trying to protect and defend Kyle. She's trying to embarrass Kathy because that's
she's jealous.
Good for everyone that she knows.
This thing where Lisa keeps saying that that Kathy needs help because of her behavior. I'm sure Kathy was acting wild. Have you seen the show? I mean, literally the day before, Erica was being insane. Hello, Amsterdam, Lisa Rinna. Everyone has had this psychotic moment.
What about Lisa across the table at Dorit's homeless, not toothless gala, having a complete
breakdown
and then taking it all back and being like, I'm sorry, I'm in a really bad place. Like, what about all that? That's literally what Kathy then said.
Yeah.
Kathy had a breakdown and then came to Kyle's house and said, I'm sorry and I'm in a bad place. But Kathy needs help and you don't.
No, Lisa Rinna is so awful. And you know what? It felt like the episode was ending abruptly when Lisa and Erica were leaving. And I was actually glad Sutton brought them back in, because it's like, we're all talking about this and we're talking about you. So just get in here and defend yourselves. Like, 100%. Do I think Lisa and Erica had something to do with it leaking? 100%. Oh, I'm sorry. Kyle with the read to filth when she was like, I'm pretty sure, you know, Hilton is a better last name right now than Girardi. That was so good.
Yeah. The only thing that I thought was a good point was that if Erica and Nikki share a publicist, why would Erica's publicist leak this? But I'm sure there's other ways and other people. Who knows?
That's a great call that was made by Erica. And I do have to say, I feel like I've been hard on Kyle these last couple of episodes. Like, she did do the right thing last night. Like, she is moving away from the people who are making it hard for her sister. Like, she is being, in this moment, a good sister.
Yeah, but I think there's tension between Kathy and Kyle still.
Did you see the pictures that came out from the reunion? It was each woman on their own. They never got a group shot. It was apparently, like, so horrible.
Now I could see how the reunion goes so south, because I think that for Kyle, Rinna, and Erica, I don't know how they can come back from this quickly. I think eventually it'll all be fine, but I think the wounds are still fresh. And that throws a huge wrench into the group dynamic, which is, like, the five
and
women.
The five who have been, like, so exclusive and not inclusive of, like, the new girls, Garcelle, Sutton, Crystal. It's awkward, like, as fuck.
Yeah.
I just also love these new girls.
What I was going to say was Kris Jenner commented on Kathy's picture from the reunion, a bunch of hearts, which is just so funny because she's beefing with Lisa Rinna because Lisa was like, you know, taking up for 818 and Kris has spoken and taken Kathy's side.
No, it's like Lisa Rinna is so desperate. Her showing up in that Balenciaga outfit that Kim literally wore exactly, like, it's really losery.
But Kathy's the one who's jealous of the Kardashians.
Right. Honestly, I don't even think Lisa Rinna's jealous of the Kardashians. If anything, she's jealous of the Foster Hadids because she tried desperately to do what Yolanda did with her daughters. Yeah. And it didn't work out in the same way. Yeah. Even though Miss Amelia Gray is having like a major fashion moment. She's kind of like an it girl of fashion right now.
Yeah, she is.
And it happened like so randomly. Good for her.
Yeah.
And then Real Housewives of Salt Lake City episode 2. It was horrible. Like literally horrible. I hate the show.
I only watched half because my TV was crapping out and I thought
you missed nothing.
A cue to go to sleep.
There was a shaman, everyone cried.
Oh god.
One person stormed out. And the next week, no one's even gonna care about the person they're fighting with now because they'll be fighting with someone else. It was so bad.
That is bad. I didn't get to when they went on the trip. I saw Jen crying with her mom, and it's like
no, I can't help but think about her mom literally liquidating her entire life savings and teacher's pension, $1 million, to give to her daughter who stole money from the elderly.
For her legal fund, for only for Jen to then plead guilty. So all of that legal work was for what? I don't know, but I did feel, I can't believe, I felt for Jen a little bit in that moment because of her kids. And that's why I'm like frustrated that I'm watching this because it's like,
you know who I was frustrated with?
Why am I feeling bad for someone who took advantage of such vulnerable people whose lives are ruined. No,
because we're only seeing one side of it. Like, we're not seeing. But you know who I was, like, really actually getting annoyed with this episode was Miss Heather Gay. Because, like, I get that she's, like, the kind of class clown. She's, like, always making the joke, yada, yada.
That's a great term.
But, like, they had this shaman come. And I think shamans, I'm not even, like, into that sort of stuff. But everyone was, like, taking it seriously and, like, having a moment. And, like, she just, like, was making fun of it the whole time. And it's, like, everyone is getting into it. Like, just get into it and shut up. Like, you always have to be making fun of everything.
Read the room.
Read the room. Like, stop.
Okay, that's cool that they were into it.
Yeah. But I don't really have many other thoughts on Salt Lake City. It wasn't a particularly good episode.
No, it was not. Then Meredith was talking to Whitney. Like, Meredith is talking so much trash about Lisa that she's doing the exact same thing that Lisa did to her, which is undermining, like, her position where I know, got to be
but
so
can
angry.
I say one thing? That when they got to this house in Arizona, which was so ugly and disgusting, I was shocked. Someone walked in and was like, is this one of Mary Cosby's rentals? Like, it was, like, old big couches. Like, it was so weird. I know Meredith is, like, not acting right, but, like, she comes late to the shaman thing, and she's like, I'm sorry I'm late. I was having, like, such bad anxiety, honestly, about being here with you guys, because the last time we were all on a trip, like, my father had just died, and not only that, but, like, literally his death was weaponized against me, and now we're back here almost a year later. It's almost the anniversary, and I'm honestly just, like, I'm shook. Yep. So I can excuse her behavior a little bit, because I actually forgot how fucking evil everyone was to her last year.
Yeah.
Given what she was going through, even beyond that. So you know what? I'm going to allow it.
Okay. I like that perspective. And it's hard to remember what happened last season because, like, every episode was different and every alliance is different. And I actually can't keep up. But I appreciate that.
But the episode is not over yet. If you're listening as a podcast, please enjoy our episode, our interview with Jessica Knoll, author, screenwriter, executive producer. She's amazing and she was so funny. And if you want to watch it on YouTube, just head over to our YouTube channel and the video is up already. So thank you so much for listening to The Toast, the Millennium Show, where we deliver the fast five stories that you need to know every Monday through Friday on YouTube. So if you're watching this on YouTube, please feel free to subscribe and give this video a thumbs up. We're also available as podcasts and our podcasts can be found. So that's Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, Public Radio, iHeartRadio, CastBox, all the places. Wherever you listen to podcasts, find us, Morning Toast, leave a 5-star review about how beautiful, stunning, and smart we are. Hope you guys have an incredible Thursday. This is our final episode of the week. So we will see you back in studio on Tuesday because Monday is Columbus Day, better known as Indigenous Peoples Day. And there's no toast. So we'll see you there.
Wait, that's this Monday?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. See you Tuesday, guys. Good thing there's so many podcast episodes for you to enjoy that I am on.
Well, welcome back to the Morning Toast. I am so excited about today's guest, and I'm going to intro. We are sitting down with the iconic author of Luckiest Girl Alive, Jessica Knoll is here. You're also like a movie producer now. I don't even know how to properly introduce you.
I know. I wear several hats. I'm an executive producer. Oh. I'm a screenwriter, novelist. Sometimes I write essays for a little known place, the New York Times. Oh. You know, find me anywhere.
Maybe. Honestly, I wanted to introduce you before we got in. I have to tell you that so up until the end of 2020, I had not read a full book perhaps ever in my life. Like, I just did not like reading, and I did really judge other people who read for fun. I'm like, oh my God, get a life. And then we went on vacation.
Or
and
like, are you lying? Like I don't know no. if I believe you, you know?
No.
Oh, yeah. No.
Not lying. Like, and I don't think she ever did the school reading. I really can't. Maybe back in the day you read like Gossip Girl.
I'm saying like when people say I read for fun, like were you kind of like, yeah, you're lying. I don't believe you.
Yeah, I'm sure you do read for fun. Have you ever had alcohol? Like I was a hater. I was a big time hater. And December of 2020, we went on vacation. Jackie brought a hard copy of Luckiest Girl Alive and she finished it. And she was like, she had been trying to get me to read. And she was like, Claudia, just read this one book and just read and just trust me. And I was like, okay, you know what? What else am I doing? We were in the mountains. I read the entire book. And since then, I've read over 100 books. Like, I'm obsessed with reading
now.
It all started with Luckiest Girl Alive. And I'm not even lying.
No lie.
Oh my God. That's actually incredible. My book was like a gateway drug to reading.
Yes.
Like
that. It was a gateway drug.
No one's ever told me that before. That makes me really, really happy.
I figured that you should know, like, the work you do is so important.
Oh, thank you.
So you are the author, of course, of Luckiest Girl Alive, which just got made into a movie on Netflix, which we're going to talk about because that's so major. But I feel like before that, you were having this unprecedented success with your book. I mean, we're obsessed with it. Can you talk a little bit about, like, what the process was like from just, you know, a girl with a book to then, like, a best-selling on every list? What was that like?
Yeah, that part of it, once the book was out in the world, like that part of it happened like in a pretty contained space, like about a year. Writing the book, I'd been a magazine editor. So I was writing this book while I was working at Cosmopolitan. So I would wake up in the morning before work, get like an hour to an hour and a half of writing done. And then I would go into the office and I wrote my book in like under a year doing it that way. And I had been fortunate enough that in my very first job out of college, I had briefly and disastrously worked as an assistant to an agent at the Paradigm Agency. But what ended up happening is I met another assistant there who was like, this is actually what I want to do, be a literary agent. So I left to work in magazines and to write, and she stayed on. And at the time she was promoted to like a junior agent, like we were like probably like 27. She emailed me and was like, you're writing so much for Cosmo. Like, I know you have a book in you, like you should write a book and then like I'll sell it. And like, you know, she needed clients, like, you know, mm-hmm. she had like just been kind of anointed as a junior agent. And she also happened to be from the same area I'm from outside of Philadelphia. We didn't know each other in high school, but like we were only a year apart in age. Like it just, she got the kind of milieu of that area, which is like super specific. So it was also really great to like work with her for that reason. And then, yeah, she was able to sell it. You know, I had that connection. I think working in magazines at the time, it was like, I mean, still, I think like publishers love like magazine editors because you tend to just be like, you know a lot of people who could potentially support the book and help sell the book. So I started writing the book in 2013, it published in 2015, and yeah, all the success came, you know, pretty quickly that year of 2015. It was the best-selling debut that year. Yeah.
No, really, and that's like not normal. Like your first book gets made into a Netflix movie. Like that's not normal.
No, it's not normal. And like, it almost didn't happen a lot of time, like many times. Like it took, I mean, that was 2015, this book came out, and we're sitting here in the fall of 2022, and you know, with the movie on the horizon. So I've been with this story for almost 10 years, which is crazy.
Wow.
I feel like so many of the books that we love that we hear are going to be turned into movies or shows actually don't wind up making it all the way. So the fact that the movie is here now, Claudia and I got to watch a sneak, we got a preview of
it. I saw your Instagram.
We got screeners. which was one of the highlights of our year for sure. We really don't get screeners for anything. Oh. And if it was going to be anything, our favorite book will do.
That's amazing. So
what was the process of making this into a movie? And I have to imagine, anytime I read a book, I cast the movie in my head. It's like a fun way to use my brain. Totally. And I have to imagine when you were writing it, and even when it was going into movie production, that you had someone in your head. Was it always Mila Kunis? And how did she come to the role eventually?
So at the time that I was writing the book, I really, truly could not see past, like, I just want this to be, like, published as a book, and I want it to, like, do really well. Once the conversation started happening around optioning it for a film, like, that's when I was like, oh, you know, starting to think like that. The thing that's so, that I've just learned over the last 7 years, and not just working on this adaptation, like, I've, you know, my second book I'm working on adapting into a TV show, like, I've written original screenplays, I've adapted other people's books into screenplays now, and so it's like I'm tainted by, like, the studio, like, suits, you know, because, like, there's mm-hmm. this idea of, like, this is a bankable star, you know, people want to watch this person, like, the studio will sign off on this person, then you have to also, you know, have producer approval, director approval. Like, there's so, it's so rare that, like, in who you picture in your head and what you want is ever going to work out for whatever reason, that, like, I feel like I don't even dream anymore.
Right.
Because I'm just so, like, I just have so, I just, in my head, I'm, like, so practical about it now. And so the Mila of it was really interesting because we had been set up at the Lionsgate studio for years, and they were really interested in it initially, and then they just couldn't get it off the ground, and they would only make it with, like, two actresses, and we were like, we're never gonna get them because they're, like, crazy busy and booked up for years, and they're like, well, no one's gonna, like, want to come to a theater to, like, see, like, you know, all this, you know, sensitive material, which is always so weird to me because I'm like, but there's, like, humor and irreverence in this. And, like, it's also yes. just, like, a really compelling, intriguing story. So, like, they were just hyper focused on the more traumatic elements of the book. So when we got to Netflix, it was 2019, and Scott Stuber, who's the head of the film department there, was like, the first person we want you to go out to is Mila Kunis. And my reaction was actually, I was annoyed because the whole point of going to Netflix was that we would have flexibility in terms of the star we could go out to. And we had just, I had just been on this hamster wheel for years of going out to big name stars and having them say no. Like, they're like, this is just too, like, it's just too tricky. I'm just too scared to kind of touch it. And I was like, we're just wasting time. Like, I thought if we came to Netflix, like, we would just be able to, like, we would have, like, a longer list of names we could go out to. Like, they wouldn't have to be these big megawatt stars. And I was like, she's just going to take forever to read. And then she's just going to say no. And then we're going to lose momentum. And, like, this is exactly what happened at Lionsgate. And so I was, like, really, really annoyed. And then she read it and was like, I'm into this, guys. Like, let's talk. And so I had to eat my words because it, like, ended up being the best thing ever.
No, and she was amazing. We've seen the movie. She was incredible. I have to imagine, like, any book to an author is deeply personal. But I read in your acknowledgments that, you know, there were parts of Tiffany's story that were true to you. So I imagine, like, handing that over to a Lionsgate or Netflix can be quite uncomfortable, honestly, because it's your story being told by someone else through someone else's eyes. So you said that you were an executive producer, is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
So you were able to control it a little bit more?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was the fact that I was also the writer. It's, I think that executive producer is almost a little bit of a vanity title for some people. Mm-hmm. Some people it's not. Some people you're actually doing the executive producer work. And sometimes if you're the author of the IP of the original material, but you're not involved in the adaptation, they'll give you producer, maybe not executive, but like, or maybe they do. I shouldn't actually speak on this. Like, I know, but normally you get some sort of producerial credit. And yes, like consulting, like they'll show you drafts, but like, if you don't like something, mm-hmm. they're not going to like change it. being, yeah. like, that was partly why I was like, I have to be the one to adapt this myself, even though I've never written a screenplay before, because the idea of not being involved every step of the way and, like, knowing what was going on, like, it just would have made me bananas crazy. Like, I'm crazy. Just such a control freak. So it was, like, that as much of, at the time that the story was being handed over, I hadn't really been vocal about the fact that there was a lot of me and my own experience in this character. So I think it was also me trying to be super protective of, like, my own self and my own story. So I was like, no, I need to be, like, involved in everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when you adapt a book into a movie, overall, like, when was the first day on set?
The first day on set was June something of 2021. So we had post-production. Oh. Yeah. So we had post-production. It was about 4 months overall, which includes post. Or sorry, no, I'm saying post. Includes pre-production. So that pre-production is about like a month. So you're not filming for that whole time. And you get weekends off or like whatever. Our weekends happen to be Saturday and Sunday, but sometimes your weekends are like Monday and Tuesday. It just depends what your film schedule is. So yeah, it was like a Monday sometime in June. I'm sure I can get the exact date. And we started with all the flashbacks. So Mila actually wasn't even on set at that point. It was just all the, I call them kids, but they're all over 18. Right. But all the kids in the flat. They're kids to me.
Yeah. Like, and the actress who played young Mila was incredible.
Kiara. She's so good. Oh my God, amazing. Right? She's so incredible. And as like a human being, she's just like an incredible person too.
So how do you decide? Because like the book was, it was a pretty long book. How do you decide what makes the cut for a film and what doesn't? Like, how do you decide what is integral to the storyline?
Yeah, it's interesting because it's like there are things that we've taken out, put back in, that we've added that aren't in the book. Like it was like a constantly evolving kind of document. Like I probably wrote close to 60 drafts of that script over the years. And it's, you know, you always hear people say that like film is much more collaborative than a book, and it truly is. And you, with a book, like it's really just kind of you and your editor, and it's very hands off in a lot of ways. In a movie, there's so much more money at stake, and so you have so many more people who have to weigh in and give their opinion, from all the producers to your director to your executives at whatever your studio is. So a lot of times there would even be like conflict, or you know, some people feeling like I want this or I want to lose this. So I just did my best to like, I fought for what I really wanted. I ceded some battles, because I'm like, maybe I wouldn't have made that choice as like a storyteller, but this person who knows this medium and has been doing this for years and years and years is telling me this is the right decision and giving me a really good argument as to why. So I'm gonna, and I trust everyone I'm working with, so I'm going to trust them that this is the right decision. And like, there was an example in particular where I fought really hard for something, and in the end our director was like, I'm going to take this out and I want you to see a cut of the film without these two scenes in it. And he showed it to me and I was like, damn it,
yeah,
you're right. You know,
yeah, I love the movie because I think it's so similar to the book. I feel like that really doesn't happen so often. There are always so many changes or storylines that have to be left out. And I feel like aside from like a few things, it's really how I envision the book. Even the people, Mila Kunis, like she's Ani through
Luke,
and through.
Luke was perfectly cast.
Yeah.
Luke was perfectly cast.
Oh my God, Finn is so good.
He's so good. Also, the settings were so wonderful. And I feel like the production value, even the fact that it was based in New York, I feel like so much stuff that's based in New York isn't actually filmed here. But these are city streets, city scenes. And they filmed
outside our building, remember?
Yeah, they did. When we first saw those pictures of Mila and Luke walking down the street, like that was the most exciting thing.
That's so crazy.
Yeah, we were dying.
We were so excited, and it really felt like the book come to life. So I imagine you must love the movie, yeah?
Right.
Yes, I love it. I mean, I've seen it, oh my God, I've seen it so many times, and I've seen it through so many iterations, you know, like the first cut was really, really rough. And I, you know, this is my first rodeo with, you know, being involved in, like, I've been in the develop process for a lot of things, but I've never gotten to production. I've never gotten to post. I had no idea post was going to be as much work as it was, which we were based out of New York for that. I was back and forth. I live in LA now, but I was like back and forth to New York a lot over the winter. And I couldn't believe how much writing and rewriting I was doing, because they're recording stuff in ADR sessions and kind of like slipping it in, like all that movie magic. But yes, it was absolutely... it was beautifully lit, which is like, and all the actors who were on set were like, this is, so I have to give credit to our DP, Colin Watkinson, for that, because like, he did all of that lighting and all of those camera angles and like worked with our director very closely to like pull that off, and the color palette and all of that. And like, some of the extras would even come off set and be like, this is the most like beautifully lit production I've ever been on. And I was like, wow, oh my God, that's amazing. You know, so like I learned all these things that are like important to people in front of the camera that like as someone behind the camera, like I never would have even thought of on my own. So yeah, it was a very like educational experience for me too.
Yeah, it was stunning. I particularly love the Nantucket scenes, that home, that country home. I need one of those.
Yes, I need one of those too.
Can I ask you a question, like from the book? Because am I toxic? Because I like would have taken a bullet for Ani and Mr. Larson. Like they needed to get together, and I think there's like a group of us who like ship them so hard. And like, what about an alternate ending where they end up together?
They end up together. Well, it's so funny because like agree. Like, hard agree.
Yeah, okay, go on. Okay.
And, like, that's why I wrote that.
Yeah,
it's so funny because when I was writing the book, I got to the point where, like, they were back on the main line for filming of the documentary. And they had done everything and they were, like, you know, getting really close because they're, like, having these really intimate conversations. And then I was like, okay, now they're going to have sex. And so I, like, would sit down and I would try and write them having sex. And I couldn't. Like, everything I wrote felt so wooden. And I finally turned to my... literally. Oh, my God. I walked right into that one. No one to blame but myself. I consulted my agent, Alyssa, and I was like, I can't write the scene. And she was like, what if they don't actually sleep together? Like, what if it's just a kiss? And then when I... went in to write the chapter with that in mind, it just like flowed so easily. Yeah. And so there was something about it where like, and Alyssa was always saying, she was like, look, for some people, she's going to be such a tough pill to swallow, the character herself, that you don't want to like add to that. You don't want to add another barrier for some people. Some people are like, look, I get that she's a bitch. I get it. I'm on board, you know? And, like, that's how I am. Like, she just doesn't bug me. But there are, you want a lot of people to read it. So it's like, how many readers are you going to potentially lose because you're like, okay, I don't like all these other things she said and done. And now she's, you know, screwing a married man.
Right.
So I think it was better all around in the end that they don't sleep together. And it's always a little hotter when there's like that tension, right? It's like,
yes. And he was, you know, at one point her teacher. So like, even though he was a really young, hot, cool teacher, I guess it probably was for the best. But I just wanted you to know, like, there is a community of us who ship hard. Yeah.
I get it. And it's like, it's that, you know, I was actually talking to one of our producers on the movie, and like, we were just saying like, you know, we need to like work on like an erotic thriller together. Like, I need to write something.
I'll read it.
Produce it, because it's like, yeah, it's just like, right? Like, it's just when things are wrong, they feel so right. You know, like, it's like, what is that? Like, it's all, anything, give me anything toxic. Like, I'm just like, shows me how far I have to go in therapy, because I'm like, I'm into it.
100%. I will be first in line to read that. So movie is out. People are loving it. You're kind of like the toast of the literary world. The toast. Oh. And you just came right before this from doing the Kelly Clarkson show. And we are head over heels obsessed with Kelly Clarkson. Like, please tell us about her.
So everyone told me, they were like, Kelly is legitimately like the coolest, most down to earth person like you'll ever meet. The people who were telling me this, like, I trusted them because there are also people who have like warned me in advance of like, this person may not be exactly what you're expecting. So I've had those encounters too. So when these people are telling me she's actually really amazing, I was like, I know she will be. She is. She's not intimidating at all. She's so easy to talk to. She's just like a girl you want to like go get like margaritas with. Like she's really, really cool.
A dream. Margaritas with Kelly.
A dream. I mean, can you imagine a better date? No. So yeah, and they sent us home with these amazing gift bags that had this has a bottle of red, and then these specialty chips that they're like the only chip that is made to be had with wine. I never heard of this before. Good. And there's one
Kelly.
One is Manchego flavored, and one is smoked Gouda. And I'm like, this is the best gift bag anyone has ever sent me home with.
Kelly really is so classy.
She's so classy.
Yeah.
So
tell us, we're gonna be like first people in line for your next book. Can you give like the peeps a little update on that? Because I follow you on Instagram. Totally. It's been a journey.
Oh my god. So my next book is we don't have an exact publication date, but it's gonna be summer 2023, and it's fiction. But it is based on a real life crime. I feel like I should just say it. Like, this will be like the first time I'm like talking about it publicly, but I think I should just say it. Like, when else am I gonna get the opportunity? 100%. So, Ted Bundy, who I'm sure you guys know who Ted Bundy is. Okay. So, Ted Bundy is a notorious serial killer who operated in the 1970s. And I always knew who he was, like, you know, by name. I knew he was like the Seattle killer, and he was like handsome and smart and like charismatic and all these things. And a couple years ago, there was a new documentary that was out about him. And I just noticed this conversation happening on Twitter that was like, why are we getting like another documentary about him? Like, don't we already know everything there is to know about him? Like, what about like the, you know, he murdered over 35 million. I mean, in some estimates, like it could be as many as 100 women. And they were like, we don't know anything about these women. So I thought that was interesting. And I started just like doing a little research. I was like, I wonder if there's anything there. And I just found a whole new angle of this story that I was like, I've not seen this covered anywhere. Like, I did not know that his final spree happened in Florida, where he entered the sorority house at Florida State University and attacked four girls in 15 minutes, left two of them dead, and that the surviving women and the women who lived in the sorority had to go on to be deposed by him because he was acting pro se as his own attorney. This was like legal. They had to face him down. And these are women like in their early 60s. Like, this didn't happen like that long ago, you know? And the way they were treated and kind of mistreated, and there was so much sexism and so much misinformation about how brilliant he was not, I was amazed. He was like a law school dropout. Like, right. He had terrible LSAT scores. Like, all this stuff, the way he was like memorialized and remembered, it's so not true. And these women were actually really the exceptional ones. So it's a kind of a fictional retelling from the perspective of one of the sorority girls, who's not a real person, but like just inspired in general by like some of these women I read about. And then also from a woman who ultimately becomes his victim back in Seattle. And there's kind of like a character that goes between these two storylines and is kind of helping bring him to justice. And there's also a lot of mystery around some of the crimes still in Seattle, like answers that, you know, so I kind of imagine what some of these answers are that people never get. So there's still like a, you know, you're kind of pulling at a thread to figure out what happened. So it's a cool, you know, it's Florida. That part of Florida is really cool and like a gothic part of Florida. I don't like, do you guys know Florida very well? Because I
just moved here.
You're like left. Oh my God, wait, you live in Florida?
She just moved.
Stop. Here, like 2 months ago.
The Panhandle, which is like the northern part of Florida, it's very old gothic south. Like, it's almost like you're in like not like if the saying about Florida, which I think is so interesting, is the further south you go, the more north you get. And then the more north you go, the further south you get. Because north is like Miami and it's like super cosmopolitan. Mm-hmm. And then when you're up in kind of northern panhandle area, it's really that like old, old southern, like gorgeous oak trees and all of that. So I also had, it was very intriguing to me to like learn about this area and like do research there and all of that. It was like a great setting. Like very rich setting for my next book.
We love a rich setting.
We do.
A rich
and
setting.
I love the
Are you able to call him Ted Bundy in the book, or do you have to come up with more fiction?
No, so that's the other thing. Well, I did it on my own because what I read was when I pulled all the archives from I pulled all the transcripts from the Florida archives of the depositions of the, you know, the trial transcripts. And what I found so fucking awesome was that he is recorded in the records as the defendant. And all he ever wanted to be known as was a lawyer, an attorney. Like, mm-hmm. he never completed law school. Like, he couldn't. He wasn't a good law student. He wasn't smart. He was just given the benefit of the doubt because he was, like, kind of a normal-looking guy.
Right.
And all these women who raised the alarm about him, like, were just not really believed. And so he is in these transcripts. He's acting as the attorney, but he's not given a name. He's just called the defendant because that's actually what he is. So I refer to him in my book as the defendant.
Got it. Oh, well, I love like
he doesn't
that
get a name.
Perspective on the reason for this new book, because Jackie and I were just having this conversation on the podcast last week where, like, as a culture, we've gotten to this extremely bizarre place where we, like, romanticize these male serial killers and we make a million TV shows about them. And in every show, they're hotter and cooler and more suave than the next. And it's like, you're not really getting a nuanced POV about, like, the actual horrendous acts of crime that these people committed. Yeah. And they're almost, like, becoming celebrities in a weird way.
Yes.
Again.
Well, that's what happened again to him. He was like, yeah. And also that, like, the victims are just lost in this telling. Like, who are they?
Yeah.
Like, what, like, I think just, like, humanizing them and not always showing, like, the violence. They're only shown to show that there were, like, the violence that's shown against them.
But, right.
Like, these were women that had, like, big dreams, big goals. Like, some of them went on to do amazing things with their lives. Others were, like, right at that, like, the most exciting period in your life, like, just, you know, a lot of them were college students, you know, and, like, about to take their final exams, and, like, they had big plans, and they were, like, really cool. Like, some of these girls I was, like, reading about, and I interviewed some of the sorority girls, and I'm like, these were, like, cool, fun girls, you know, and, like, history has just completely forgotten about them and swept them aside, and, like, they're just, like, the victims, you know.
So true.
I just think this is, like, it's a reimagining, and it's just from a point of view of it's everything you don't know about the story that you think you do. Because I really thought I knew this story. And then I did my research, and I was like, this is even crazier than I ever imagined. And, like, I'm so intrigued, and, like, all of this is so compelling to me. Like, I have to find a way to, like, make this into a book. So that's number three, baby.
That sounds very exciting. So good. Thank you so much for being here. Like, this has truly been an honor. I don't think we've ever had an author, except for me.
Except for you.
Yeah, of course. But thank you so much for being here. And thank you for the work that you've done. Because honestly, the two of you, this is a thank you to Jackie and to Jessica. Because Jackie finally got me hooked on reading. And you were the vehicle, your book. So it's really been an honor to talk to you. Congrats on all the success with the movie and the book. I mean, it's not shocking. You're so talented. And it's really been an honor to have you on the show, for real. Thank you so much.
Thank you. This has been so much fun. Thank you for having me.
You're so welcome. And everyone, go check out Luckiest Girl Alive on Netflix. But yes, I would recommend reading the book first. I think you should do both. That's always a favorite activity, and you can compare and contrast.
100%.
So you're here.
See you on the next one. Bye.
Bye.